And thank you for spreading out across the whole room. That will make this feel much more intimate, so thank you for that. Matter of fact, could some of you move up even more to the balconies and such? No, that'd be good. This morning, I was walking out of the hotel and walked out to the hotel to get to the car to come here. And when I did, I felt a satanic cold wind blow through my, you know, that verse that says that the devil is the prince of the air. This morning, I believe that in a different way. And I made a decision right then and there. I'm going to go back to Florida today. But we're going to make the most of our time that we do have here. And I'll be praying for God to do some amazing things through your life. And I've so appreciated getting to be here and get to hang with some amazing people. And today I just want to talk about, I want to be as practical as I can. And there's a lot of different leadership pursuits and a lot of different things you could work, areas in which you could work on your leadership, say it that way, about applications where your leadership will kick in and be advantageous. I want to talk about maybe the three that I think always pay off. So if you can get to be a better leader in these three areas, it will pay off in your life. The other thing that I would add to this is that this is going to work in any area of your life. Okay, so these concepts and this development in you, at some point, if you implement some of this stuff, I may get a note from your boss that you work for at some, you know, plant somewhere, or like whatever, you know, some vocation, because it would work there. It'll work in your family. It'll work, of course, in the church. And so we're going to jump into these three leadership pursuits that always pay off. And we're going to start kind of macro and get micro. We'll start big and go smaller as we go. So we would start with kind of more the organization, like leadership will pay off, a pursuit to lead the organization well. And when I say that, you help lead the organization from a lot of different seats. That's not just the key leader who leads the organization. And so we'll start with organization, then we'll go a little bit smaller and go team. Maybe the team you're on or the team you lead, and maybe ways to enhance and the areas we want to watch for as we lead teams. And then we'll end with the hardest one of all, which is leading ourselves. And so let me pray one more time. And there have been a lot of prayer this weekend already, but let me pray one more time. Father, I just thank you for these incredible leaders that have gathered in this room. And I thank you for the amazing content that is going out across this campus right now and in so many sessions with so many gifted people. And Lord, I just pray that you would help us to be sharpened by our time with one another right now. And I thank you for your word. And I thank you for your calling on our lives. And we just pray, God, that as we walk in that calling, that we would grow and be developed into a vessel that you could be glorified through. And we love you in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Let's talk about leading the organization, or I would word it this way: a pursuit that'll pay off is a pursuit of a cultivated culture. A cultivated culture. When we talk about the culture of an organization, or the culture of a workplace, or the culture of a church, we're talking about more than just a sign on the wall, or a poster, or a talking point. Culture is different than that. I like to describe culture this way. There was one time, a Saturday morning, when my kids were all little. By the way, I have five kids, all girls, believe it or not, except for my four boys. And I've got, amen, got some mileage out of that joke. Sorry. So I have four sons and a daughter, and it was a Saturday morning, and we had ran out of the house to go do some errands or something like that. And then while we were out, my wife was like, oh, I need to run to the mall. And for whatever reason, the mall that we were closest to at that point was a mall in Orlando called Mall of Millennia. And it is the nicest mall in Orlando. It's probably one of the nicer malls in the state of Florida. I'm not sure. Super nice. I mean, it's the kind of mall that, like, you probably should go to the other mall and buy a new outfit before you go walking into the mall of Mall of Millennia. It's one of those, all these high-end stores, but it has normal stores too. Trust me, we weren't in the high-end side, okay? We were in the normal side. Anyway, so she says, let's run by there. So we get out of the car, and we're getting ready to walk up and go into the mall. And I kind of turned around as my family was now following behind me, and I started looking at my kids, and I was like, honey, Who dressed these children? Like, what is going on right now? Who's their parent? Like, I don't, what's happening here? My kids were so mismatched. They had hair going all different directions, pajama top still on, missing a sock. Like, they just absolutely looked so embarrassing. And I was like, I just hope they walk far enough behind me that people don't know they're with me. Now, here's the thing about me being so embarrassed by how my kids look. They were fine when they were in my house. I never even noticed. They were fine in my car. I never even noticed. Heck, we might even stopped at McDonald's that morning. They were fine for McDonald's. But when we were getting ready to step foot into the Mall of Millennia, all of a sudden I was like, this is not appropriate. Why did I have that feeling? Because of culture. Because there is a culture set in that mall and that's what culture does. Culture will cause you to adjust. Culture will encourage you to a different standard. That's why culture is so important. And everything has a culture. And here's the thing about the culture is you don't have to tell people your culture. They experience your culture. Okay? You don't have to tell people your culture. They experience your culture. As a matter of fact, sometimes people know your culture better than you know your culture. Because in, like, especially in churches, in the church world, a few years back, this got very popular, but, you know, we would put our three things that we're standing for around here, and we'd put them on the wall, and so we'd make these fancy posters that have our, you know, this is what we are, and this is what we do, and we'd put those up there, and then we go, now, that's our culture. But culture is not discovered, it's not cultivated by signs on the wall. And the way culture is created and cultivated is by our values, okay? It's our values. What do you value? Now, here's a cool practice to do. This works really good in the church. It would work in the business world as well. But when someone comes through, maybe you get a visitor at the church, and maybe it's a new believers class or something like that. A great question to ask in that new believers class would be this: hey, what do you think is important to us here at this church? And what you're going to find is you're going to find what your culture is, and you'll also find that it may not be your talking points or the poster on the wall. They may say that there's some things you value. Or maybe a new employee comes on. Let's talk about the workplace. A new employee comes on. Maybe you have after a month or after 3 months, maybe there's a sit down and an adjustment as part of the onboarding. Great question to ask. What do you think we value here in this organization, here at this company? What do you think we value? And what you're going to get is your culture. So culture is set by what we value. And so watch this. Culture is set by what we value. There might be a better way of saying that, though. Culture is set by what our actions say we value. Can I say that one more time? Culture is actually set by what our actions say we value. Let me define what I mean when I'm talking about culture real quick. Culture is a shared behaviors, shared beliefs that define just the way we do things around here. Let me say that it's a shared behaviors and beliefs that define the way we do things around here, again, more than branding, more than signing, more than policies, more than an org chart, more than a building. Great organizations are shaped by intangibles and by actions that show our values. And culture is always being formed. It's always being cultivated. It should always be paid attention to. Here's one of the problems with the fact that everything has a culture is that great cultures don't happen by accident. Like if I have a garden in my backyard and I don't tend to that garden, how many know this? Something's still going to grow back there. There's going to be something. Now, it may not be the things I want to grow, but something is going to grow. That is the same in our organizations. It's the same in our families. It's the same in our churches. It's the same in our workplace. Something's going to grow. And if we're not paying any attention to it, well, then whatever's growing is going to become our culture. And leaders certainly help set that and help protect that. It's one of the primary callings of a leader is to protect that. And so our values are shaping that. And as leaders, the way we want to have the right value system and the actions behind that to create the right culture is a couple of things. We want to reward when people are acting and behaving in a way that supports our culture. So we want to watch for that. And like we do that in our organization. We monthly will bring up people on our teams that are just living the culture and acting out and behaving the way that is helping reinforce what we want to be. So it's rewarded. Also, the way culture is set is by what gets tolerated. And so sometimes we're tolerating people that are behaving outside the culture, but we don't want to approach it. We don't want to mess with it. And so what's that doing? It's helping set the wrong culture because of what we tolerate. And then what we tolerate will often be repeated, and that just gets us into even more trouble. There was a management expert named Peter Drucker, and he said this. He has a quote that he's kind of well known for. He said, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast." So what he's saying is this, is that you can have whatever strategy you want to have, but if your culture does not support that, in other words, if my behaviors and my actions and my values don't support the strategy is going to die. Can I talk about it in a practical sense of something like this? We come to a conference like this, and we hear some teaching on some strategy for church growth. And we're like, man, yes, we're going to be evangelistic now. And so we're going to start this strategy where we go door to door and we go this and that, and we're going to do soul winning, and we're going to blah, 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 like whatever it is, right? We go back home. Now here's the thing. If our culture is not a soul winning culture, then the soul winning strategy is not going to work. So strategies are going to die. That's why culture is so important. That's why the ultimate value system is so important. And so if that's true, then strategies come and go. Culture is more deeply embedded in our organization and who we are. And healthy cultures never happen by accident. They are cultivated, they're protected, and they are reinforced by the leaders in the organization. And by the way, I want to say this. I'm going to provide space at the end for us to do some Q&A. And so if you have a question while I'm talking, you can shoot your hand up. We can do it that way too. But we will take some time at the end for some Q&A, and it could be on some of the stuff we covered today, or it could be on something else. And that's the part of the talk that I would look the most forward to, is the Q&A. All right. So I wanted to mention that. So that's a little bit of just leading culture. Let me say this final thing about culture is like your favorite restaurant, okay? And you just maybe thought of one, your favorite restaurant. It is your favorite restaurant not based on one thing. So that favorite restaurant is not based on the fact that it has good food. Your favorite restaurant, you probably like the food, but there is an experience that you are enjoying. There is a feeling you get when you walk in before you put the food in your mouth that you are, it's, you know what that is? It's culture. And the same in our churches. It's not any one thing. And so, yes, we could have the best preacher in the world, but that's not going to be enough. What we need to have is a culture that people feel what we want them to feel when they come into our environments. We might want to have a culture that even causes them to be encouraged to kind of step up and become something more in their life, because that's what our culture is doing. So leading the organization that way and just paying attention to how things are feeling and how things are. Again, the best way to grade how you're doing is ask some new people, what do you think we value? That'll tell you what your culture is. Make sense? All right, let's go to the second one. Let's talk about teams. So we got the whole organization. Now let's talk about a leadership pursuit that I think will always pay off, and that is pursuing a healthy team. And I'll just be honest, I have become really addicted to team ministry and team leadership, and I don't make many decisions at all without bouncing them off of my team. And I mean, I've been that way now for a long time. I didn't start out that way. I started out in ministry a little bit more like just we're all solos, and if you go do your job and I'll do my job, and if we walk by each other in the hall, maybe I'll say hi, maybe I won't, depending on what kind of mood I'm in. And but if you do your job and I'll do mine, and everybody just leave each other alone. And that would have been my default nature. And I learned pretty early on with some of my staff that was not a great environment for them. And so I started to develop and grow and learn the value of team and the value of doing ministry with people. And man, once I tapped into that, once I started that, I'm not going back. Like it was so much better, so much more valuable. It was producing a much better result than anything that we were doing individually. When I talk about team, let me say this. This has not to do with size of church or size of business or anything like that. No matter what size of church I had, if I was the only staff member at a church, if I was the pastor and that's the only staff member we had, I would still somehow form a team of people that I met with regularly just to bounce some ideas off of and talk through where we're going and what we're doing. I believe in it like that. And so this is not a thing of like, well, yeah, we're not a big church with a big staff, and so that's why we don't have teams. I'm just saying, if it was me, because I've gotten so reliant on that and I've seen the benefit of that so much, that I'd pull some church people and say, hey, you want to be on my team? And I'll tell you this, if you say that to somebody in your church, most of the time they're going to say yes, because they're going to be sensing the cool opportunity there. So pursuing a healthy team. And teamwork is a multiplier. The U.S. men's Olympic basketball team has, every time they've been in the Olympics, they've only not won gold 4 times, okay? Men's basketball has not won gold only 4 times in the history of them participating in basketball in the Olympics. Only one time that they didn't win gold since we've allowed professional players to play. And that was in Athens. That was in 2004. Some of the players on our team that did not win gold that year, Argentina defeated us. Some of the players on that team, Allen Iverson, Dwayne Wade, Tim Duncan, LeBron James. By the way, I feel like I'm in a room that understands that the GOAT in basketball, the greatest of all time, was a man named Michael Jordan, not LeBron James. I thought I was, see, I knew it. My people. You guys got to help educate these young whippersnappers that don't know any better, okay? Can I break this down for 1 second? Is that all right if we talk basketball for a second? Let me break it down for 1 second. I will give it to them that LeBron James has had maybe the greater career, because he didn't go play baseball for a couple years. He didn't retire twice and come back. Like, he didn't do that. So I would give it to them that he's been in it for a long time and still moving pretty well. But I'm talking about when you're in, if you're going to talk about comparing two players when they're in their prime, it is no comparison. Michael Jordan would destroy you to win. He'd destroy his own team to win. He was going to win. All right, I'm going to move on. Amen. So this men's basketball team with star-studded, full of people, 2004 in Athens Olympics, and they lose to Argentina. Argentina did not have as much talent player by player at all. No one would have ever tried to compare the talent, but what Argentina had that the USA did not have is teamwork. And they were working together, and it wasn't a group of individuals. No, it was a team that was relying on one another. And healthy teams will always outperform a collection of gifted individuals. A healthy team will always outperform a collection of gifted individuals. And so let me talk about some of the dysfunctions that will break our teams down. And they are in order on purpose. And so the bottom layer of this possible dysfunction or possible strength in our teams, so the bottom layer, and it has to start with this, would be a lack of trust. So if we say a lack of trust is the dysfunction for a team, then we want teams to have high trust. Okay, that's the functional part of the team. And that's where we begin with teams, is with trust. In other words, the team members that are sitting across from me at the table, or across from me at church, or across from me at my workplace, whoever is on my team has to trust that I have their back, and I have to trust that they have my back. And there are so many times when we will walk out of meetings and somebody will have something to say about somebody else that was in that meeting or on our team, and we just let that happen. And so what we try really hard to do in our organization, like with my leadership team, which is my team, my leadership team knows I'm not going to have a conversation about them that I'm not willing to have with them. We know that about that. Why? Because that's high trust. We just know that we have to trust one another. We take that pretty serious. Like if somebody. This is part of our culture in our organization, in our workplace, but if somebody comes, whether they're an employee or somebody from the church might email and say, hey, I want a meeting with you. And we might ask, well, what's the meeting about? And if they say, the meeting is about the children's department, man, my kid and this happened and blah, blah, blah. Then our response is going to be, yes, Pastor Johnny would be glad to meet with you about that. He will also have Pastor Ashley in the meeting with us as we discuss this. I've had employees come to me and say, hey, I need to talk to you. I say, okay, yeah, what about? And then they'll say, they'll mention their direct report or their boss. And I'll say, okay, yeah, we can do that. And so I said, I'll make sure that he's comes to the meeting too. And then they've said, oh, no, I don't want to do that. I just want to talk to you about it. And so I just look at the person and say, but that's not how we function. Because I want my team members to know I'm not going to have those side conversations. And let me tell you, something amazing happens when you start to operate in that level of trust. I might have our school department complaining about our media department, and they dropped the ball on this, and they dropped the ball. And so what we do in the midst of that meeting is I say, hey, pause 1 second. Let me see if we can get our media director to pop in here real quick. Media director will pop in. I say, hey, so they're saying that maybe there was a miscommunication, you guys dropped the ball in that event. What happened with that? And then all of a sudden the media director saying, well, no, the information we got was this, and we asked for the other thing, and we never got a response back. All of a sudden I didn't know that. And because there was just a little bit of trust and a little bit of communication, now it's amazing how the story has changed from that department is horrible to, oh, okay, I kind of see. Or the department comes in and says, yeah, we did drop the ball. And man, we're sorry. I don't know how that happened. Okay, that's better than you and I talking about it. Let's all talk about it together. So I really value trust in our teams and our teams knowing we're not going to talk behind one another's back. It's just so important. There's transparency there. There's vulnerability there. And so trust is that first layer. And a lack of trust is gonna disrupt our team right off the jump. No matter what else we work on, if we don't have trust, we don't have anything. First layer is trust. So a lack of trust will be a dysfunction. Second layer, and they do again. They go in order. It's like we're building a wall or building a layer upon layer, is a fear of conflict will be a dysfunction. A fear of conflict. And if a fear of conflict is a disruption, then healthy conflict is a value I want on my teams. When we say healthy conflict, here's what we mean. We want in every meeting that we have, we want there to be conflict. We want there to be, I mean, I could even use the word arguing. I want there to be some arguing. And I know some of us have leadership styles where we're like, that freaks us out. You're like, man, I do not want any conflict. I do not want any arguing in a meeting. Here is the value and the beauty of some give and take and some. I love that when I have team members that are passionate. If we're sitting in a meeting and we're going, should we go direction A or should we go direction B? Man, I love when a team member is passionate about direction A. And then I love when another team member is passionate about direction B. What I don't love is for all the team members to sit there quiet and see which direction I'm feeling like I want to go. And then them all go, you're right, Pastor. I want to go that direction. You're wise. You're wiser than all of us. So let's go to whatever direction you feel. No, because I know I'm not that wise. Like I want that. I have to remind them all the time. You're on this team for input. You're on this team to have a passionate take on which direction we should go. And so we get into those topics and we get into those discussions and somebody's working hard to choose A and someone else is working hard to choose B. And so that conflict is there. What happens is when we are afraid of healthy conflict, and let me describe what healthy conflict looks like, because healthy conflict is not personal attack. And so when conflict starts to, and we've experienced it, you're going to, like, when you start to really have healthy teams, you're going to have some things to navigate at times. So when you start to encourage, say it this way, when you start to mine for conflict, we mine for it. Like, when we're in a discussion and no one disagrees, I'm trying to find somebody to disagree so that we can mine and get the best idea wins. And so when you mine for conflict, sometimes things are going to get heated and it's going to start to spill over into personal attack. And you just deal with that in real time. You go, hey, that's not part of this discussion. And so we're going to be careful about that. I don't think you meant that the way that came out. Is that right? Yeah, you're right. And so we're dealing with that in real time. So that's the danger on this side, is sometimes it can turn into personal attack. But the danger on this side is this sneaky, dangerous thing called artificial harmony. Artificial harmony where everybody just, yeah, that's good. I'm fine. No, it's fine. It's good. And what happens when I'm afraid to ever have any honest conversation? I'm afraid to ever talk about anything that I feel like maybe could be a better way to do things around here. That artificial harmony will just turn into resentment. It'll turn into bitterness. It'll turn into me sitting in a seat when maybe my pastor is preaching, but because I haven't shared where he hasn't maybe met my expectation of what I needed, or maybe there's something I don't even understand, but I'm afraid to have any kind of moment of conflict with him, so I'm just going to button up and I'll just keep doing my job, and now I'm sitting here while he's preaching and I'm not receiving what he has to say because of some artificial harmony, because I'm pretending that everything's perfect. No, I want somebody to come to me. I just had an employee like a month ago, and we were making a big, there was a big need for us to redo our network and our Wi-Fi stuff and our, I don't know all the IT terms, security walls and ports and such, okay? And it was a big dollar figure. And so we have a guy that runs our IT, and he had kind of talked to one of our team members, and the team member talked to me about it, and I was like, man, that's a big number, and I was hoping not to spend any big numbers this year on stuff like that, and is there any other way? And I'm just trying to figure it out. And then in that meeting, I called another person in in a different team. I was like, hey, man, what do you think about this? Because you guys are, you're having the impact of some of our networking issues. So do you think this is needed now? Is there any way we could do? So we kind of talk through them. We kind of get a solution. And I'm going from meeting to meeting. And so then I send this other team member, a third team member. I say, can you go back to our IT director and tell him maybe this is what our decision is and maybe we can do it that way? So he does, and as far as I know, everything's fine. And then a day or two later, I get a text from our IT guy. He said, hey, can I talk to you a little bit? I said, yeah. And so then we get on the phone with each other, and he says, Pastor, I just wanted to say, man, I was hurt by the way you handled that, and I just don't know why you wouldn't trust me. Why would you go to other people to make that decision and not come to me with that decision? And so we talked through that, and I said kind of where my headspace was, and I said, you're right, but I said, you probably should have been the one to bring the proposal to me in the first place, and we kind of missed it right there, and so then we just weren't in the room, and I was just trying to hurry up and get that thing decided, and I said, of course, I'm always going to get input from other people. You know how I do that all the time. He's like, oh, I understand. I said, so I'm getting input from other people and just trying to make the best decision. But anyway, I got done with that conversation, and I said, Jacob, here's the thing, man. I am so glad of the way you handled this. I'm so glad that you decided to call me and go, hey, can we have a moment of conflict here? Can we have a moment where I tell you that I was disappointed and hurt by a decision you made? I want that as a leader. And leaders, again, that's why we mine for that. And when he got done with that, man, I praised him for having the wisdom to call me on that. Because I said, now, right now, he's not sitting in a church service while I'm preaching going, oh, man, he is such a jerk all the time. I wish he would just, you know, do things right. Like, no, we talked it through. And you as a leader, you as a team member, you have to welcome that. And you have to be okay with that moment of conflict. And those moments of conflict, whether it's one-on-one or in when we're deciding on something as a team for our church or for our organization or for our business or for our family even, those moments of conflict will bring us to a greater decision, a greater effectiveness than we would have had if everybody just stays quiet because they're there for a reason. Does that make sense? So yeah, we want that kind of healthy conflict. We want to we don't want to avoid hard conversations because that just brings that passive resistance and artificial harmony. Okay, third layer that will be a dysfunction on the team. So we have a lack of trust. We have a lack of conflict. And the third layer, and they do go in order, the third one would be a lack of commitment. A great team then is going to have a high commitment level. A great team is going to have high trust. A great team is going to have healthy conflict. And a great team is going to have a high commitment level. What do we mean when we say commitment? Well, committed to one another for sure. Committed to the organization for sure. But let me get practical. We're back in that meeting, right? Direction A or direction B? Do we trust each other enough to have conflict? Yes. All right, let's fight it out. I think A. I think B. All right, yeah. What do you think? I think maybe either. Okay, what do you think? Okay, and then when I, the leader, go, okay, you know what? I think A is the way. I think because it rhymes. So let's just go A is the way. B is what we should see, though. I don't know. Like, no, okay, let's go A. So then I go, okay, we're going to go A. Now here's what I need from the whole team. I need all those people that were fighting hard for B to now walk out of that meeting and go, A's the way. A, we're doing A. It's going to be awesome. It's going to succeed. What I can't have on my team is people who were on the B team to walk out and go, this is going to mess up, and I can't wait till it does. Because B was the way we should have gone. And if we're being honest, we have been there before. If we're being honest, we've been on teams or we've been that team member who we didn't get our way, and now we wouldn't say it, but inwardly we're kind of hoping for that decision to fail. And think about how petty and how dangerous that is. So no, when we make a decision as a team, that means now we walk out and we are unified and we are committed to this decision. That is a strong team. I'm telling you, God will bless that kind of commitment and that kind of unity when decisions are made, even if B would have been the better decision. I just feel like God goes, well, y'all missed it, but because you're unified on this, I'm gonna put my anointing on A and we're gonna see it work out fine. What does that look like when that team doesn't commit to the decision? That looks like then people who get up in front of other groups of people. What that looks like is a staff member that gets up with his team. The worship pastor gets up with the worship team. Or the youth pastor gets in front of the youth and says stuff like this. Well, hey guys, so we're going to do something. A decision was made and it comes from up above. So the higher ups want this to happen. What are you doing there? You're communicating, I'm not on board with this, but we have to do it. You're talking about setting something up to fail. So instead of that, no, if a decision is being made in my organization and I got to speak, especially if I got to speak into it, and yet another way was gone, then I'm going to get up and say, hey, guys, this, I mean, I can't wait to tell you what we're getting ready to do. And God's going to be all over. It's going to be incredible. That is commitment on a team. And we should protect that at all costs, that commitment with one another. So healthy teams will debate fully. They'll decide clearly. So we don't leave that debate up in the air. It's okay to push something. Maybe let's sit on this for a week and then let's make this decision. But we're going to debate. We're going to decide clearly. Okay, this is where we're going to land on this. And then we're going to support that completely. So if you are taking notes, those three, just put those. Debate fully, decide clearly, support completely. And all right, let me go to the fourth one. And again, they're in order. They build on one another. You'll see how this works in a moment. So now the fourth dysfunction for a team would be a lack of accountability. So we have lack of trust. We have lack of conflict. We have lack of commitment. And now we have lack of accountability, which means that a healthy team is going to have high accountability. What's that mean? A healthy team is going to go when there was a lack of commitment, when person on the B team went out and did say that everybody was wrong and that we should go B, there's going to be a team member that holds them accountable and says, hey, come on, you know that's not how we do things. No, once we make a decision, we're all in this together. Accountability on a great team, and guys, hear me on this, accountability on a great team, the moments in team dynamic that I love the most are when there is accountability that happens peer to peer, and not everybody is waiting on the key leader to bring all the correction. And we see that because we've really leaned into healthy team. And so there are times when there might be two team members that are talking through stuff, and then a third team member will say, "Hey man, I walked by when you guys were having that conversation." This literally is a verbatim conversation in one of our meetings. "I walked by when you guys were having that conversation, and I felt like you were getting a little bit like aggressive, and I don't know if you were like tired or whatever, but I felt like your approach wasn't right in that situation." And I'm sitting back as the boss, not having to correct the employee because a team member is correcting the employee. How can a team member sit there and receive that kind of correction from another team? What right do you have to say that to me? You know what right they have? First layer, trust. We trust one another. And we know that I'm going to say it to you, and you know that I'm not going to say it behind your back. And so it just, because these layers are all building together, and so we want high accountability on our teams. We want peers to hold one another accountable, not just the bosses holding the subordinates accountable. And then the last one, because we got to hurry a little bit, I want to take some time for questions, would be results. So a fifth dysfunction would be inattentiveness to results. And so there is our layer. So we start with trust. We got healthy conflict. We got strong commitment to one another. We've got accountability to one another. And now, because of those things, we will see results. And results are the reason why we do team anyway. So we want to measure how we're doing with results. And so, like, in other words, sometimes if our team is saying, we're going to accomplish this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to change our culture this way, or we're going to implement this system, and we're going to take this ground, and we're going to do this ministry idea, and we're going to accomplish it. And then if that doesn't happen, and we're not seeing the results that we want to see, it's probably down the layer. Because if our teams are running well, results are going to come. And so we're just constantly measuring results, because a lack of results is going to be a sign that we have an unhealthy area, unhealthy layer in our team. And so that's just an idea of teams. And I'll say this one more thing about teams. If there's layers of in your organization or layers at your workplace, let me say this final thing about teams. The team that you're on is more important than the team that you lead. So in our organization, we are a series of teams. Literally almost every employee is on a team somehow. And that means some of them are on a team and some of them lead a team. And their highest importance, highest loyalty, I don't know what the word would be, their highest priority is the team they're on, not the team they lead. And that's just a good warning there on teams. Okay, last one would be this. A pursuit that will always pay off is to pursue a better you. And this is the hardest one of all of them, is leading yourself is the toughest leadership assignment you'll have. Let me say that one more time. Leading yourself will be the toughest. I have it there in the notes that way. That the toughest person you'll ever have to lead is yourself. And yet, the most direct way to make your family better, the most direct way to make your church better, the most direct way to make your work or your job or your company better is to make yourself better. It's the most direct way to do it. So if I'm on staff at a church and I want my church to be better, the first and best thing I can do is I'm going to improve myself. I'm going to get better. And so a pursuit of what that looks like to lead yourself, and why leading of myself is so important, is because I'll never be able to sustain any leading anyone beyond where I am willing to go or have gone. Now, you'll have outliers. In other words, let's say it from a spiritual place. If I'm here with Jesus, there might be a couple moments or a couple seasons or a couple people that get to there with Jesus in my church, but it's not going to be sustained. So where I lead myself spiritually is going to ultimately be the cap for where the people who are following me get spiritually. And on in every other area of our life, it's the same way. So we'll not sustainably lead others beyond where we're leading ourselves. That's why it's so important. And so one of the kind of interesting and unique things that I've just noticed in my now 35 years of church ministry and church leadership, and is that when I see deficiencies in our congregation, when I see deficiencies in our staff, when I see deficiencies in our organization in one way or another, so often it's funny, like when I start to go, man, we're a little bit anemic in this, or what's going on in this area? So many times I've had to turn the mirror back on myself and go, oh, wait, it's because I'm a little bit deficient in this area right now. Man, where's everybody's passion? Oh, wait, where's my passion? Where's everybody's focus right now? I feel like everybody's just going 100 different directions. Oh, wait, where's my focus right now? And so it so often comes back to me needing to lead myself. And then it's amazing that once I kind of tap into that, the right leading of others just kind of oozes out. I don't have to create it and work for it because it's happening in me. So let me talk about some areas where we could lead ourselves, and I'll run through these in about 3 or 4 minutes, and then we'll take some questions. So I would say first, lead yourself spiritually. And to lead yourself spiritually is a tricky concept because, like the term burnout, we talk about burnout a lot in church ministry. And especially, man, volunteers, that can happen. I mean, we can go through something that we identify as burnout so easily. You know, staff members, it's easy to go through something that we would identify as burnout. Here's the problem. I'm sure that it's real and it's happened. I have a little bit of a difficult time believing in burnout, okay? Because I'm not meant to do ministry in my own strength. Now, I think that more often than not, burnout happens because I have allowed my spiritual power to leak, and I'm trying to do this in my own strength, and I'm trying to do this in my own effort, and I'm taking my efforts in ministry, and I'm using that as a substitute for my relationship with God in ministry. And so I say that to say this, if you are starting to experience burnout, yes, maybe you do need to take a step back from some of the active serving and the active teams. I think probably most of your leaders would be okay with that. But just doing that does not cure burnout. What will cure burnout is for you to get full of the Holy Spirit again, for you to get full of God again, for you to lead yourself spiritually, for you to decide, I need to prioritize my time with God. I need to prioritize my time in the Word. I need to prioritize times of worship where I'm not asking God for anything, but I'm just enjoying His presence. And I promise if you get into an active discipline of that and a rhythm of that, burnout's going to have a hard time chasing you down. Does that make sense? So leading yourself spiritually. Have some guardrails that kind of keep that in place. Lead yourself mentally. And so, in other words, let's grow, man. Let's get smarter. Can I say this to everybody here in this room, no matter what role you serve, maybe in the kingdom, or again, this works in every, so maybe in your job, in your vocation, why not become an expert in your field? Why not grow in your field? We could spend hours just doom scrolling on social media, or I could be listening to something that sharpens my skill set in what I'm called to do. I could spend hours binging the next show, and listen, there's probably seasons to, I'm not getting up here, I'm like, I've never binged a show. So there are seasons where that happens. But that can also become a blockade for me reading something that's going to help me become sharper and more prepared for what I'm called to do. And that goes all the way up and down, man. If I'm a teacher of a class in my church, or if I'm a small group leader, man, there's so much content that I could be consuming that makes me a better, I'm going to be the best small group leader our church has. Well, there's plenty of content. We live in a absolute just wealth of content. There, think about it. Just 20 years ago, 30 years ago, people had to go find in some conference, and I bought this cassette packet. You know, I'm going to listen to these cassettes now from this one guy, and he's teaching on this. We can listen to teaching on any topic from 1,000 experts in the world at the touch of our phone. So there's no excuse for us not to be leading ourselves mentally. John F. Kennedy said, leadership and learning are indispensable to each other. Leadership and learning are indispensable to one another. And so lead yourself mentally. The next one would be lead yourself personally. And I guess on this, I would be maybe referring to your family and your marriage and your interpersonal relationships. Guard that, especially when you're involved in ministry. But again, in any field, any vocation, healthy home life will make the work life better. And when you don't have a healthy home life, when you don't have a healthy personal life, you don't even realize it, but you're taking that hurt and that brokenness and that pain and that sensitivity, and you're taking that now to work because things are not right there. I word it this way, that sometimes when people have a sunburn, and if they have a sunburn on their shoulder, but I don't know, and I say, hey, what's going on? And they'll go, oh. And I'm like, no, this was affection. Not pain. Why did that cause you pain? Oh, it's because I have a sunburn there. And so when we go into environments broken and hurting and in pain, and someone does a normal interaction with us, and now we're going, ah, man, I hate when he comes around because he always hurts me. He's not hurting you. I'm going into it hurt, and his interaction with me is just exposing that. So guard your personal life. If you need to get help, I mean, again, so much content out there to kind of help in those relationships, but talk to somebody. Don't just ignore that home and that personal relationships in your life. Lead yourself in that. I would say quickly, lead yourself professionally. And so present yourself professionally. And if you, wherever you, you know, in your job, be the best employee. Like as I worked for my church and for my lead pastor for a bunch of years, I was a staff member a whole lot more years than I've been a lead pastor. So as I worked for my lead pastor, I really worked hard to just automatically be the kind of employee I knew he wanted. I knew what his expectations were. I knew what was important to him. And so I just tried to just be in that zone. And I wanted to have very few times where he had to come back to me and go, hey, you're not meeting my expectations in this area. As a matter of fact, it just didn't happen very often, not because I was good. It's just because I was just conscious of that. I was just like, I want to be professional in what I'm doing, and I want to treat this well. And so what does that look like for you? Maybe that looks like kind of tracking your time. And so that you're, I always want to be very efficient when I'm at work. So as I said, the home life will affect the work life, but watch this, a lack of efficiency in the work life will also affect the home life. So what does that look like? Well, I'm wasting time, and I'm not efficient, and I'm not staying on track, and now I got all this stuff that I'm taking home with me because I didn't get it done. Now I'm stressed out, and I gotta finish this, and I gotta finish that. And again, it's not to say that I never work at home. That's not what I'm saying. But we can get out of balance with these things because I'm not leading myself professionally well enough. And so it might be a matter of tracking my time, tracking my hours. It's probably a healthy thing if you've never done this, is to track exactly how many hours you are working, because there is a study that was done by the University of Maryland where they asked people how many hours they work, and then they tracked how many hours they work, and almost everybody thinks they work more hours than they actually work. So you know how people are just like, oh man, I work 100 hours a week, and then like start adding it up. It's like, well, you're at 39, but that's good. You know what I mean? Anyway, And part of leading yourself professionally, let me say this, because there are some young people in the room, and I just want to say this. If a boss expects you to work 40 hours a week, that is not spiritual abuse, okay? It's just called a job, all right? It's we're all going to be okay. God created you to do some work. And so, you know, there is such a high emphasis on, you know, rest and family and Sabbath. Well, I mean, if we want to get all up into Sabbath, that was 6 days of work and one day of rest. So be careful about pushing hard on this idea of Sabbath if you might work just five days a week or something like that. But anyway, I want to lead myself professionally and be what make the most of my professional life. And let me end with three questions I want to ask you, just as we kind of wrap this up, and then we'll take some questions for about 10 minutes. Ask yourself this question often. Would I want to work with me? Would I want to work with me? And you got to be honest with that. Would I want to work? Maybe you might want to ask yourself this question. Would I want to work for me? Would I want to work for me? Would I want to work with me? A third question, a great question to always ask yourself as you're leading yourself is, am I doing what a great leader would do? When you are faced with a difficult decision, man, I don't know what I should do with this. Ask yourself, what would a great leader do? A great leader would go and deal with this like full out. I mean, they just go head on with it and not avoid it. Well, then do what a great leader would do. Do I want to work for me? Would I want to work with me? And am I doing what a great leader would do? Okay, leading the org, leading our team, leading ourselves. Any questions along any of those lines, or any question about any other aspect of leadership or whatever? We'll take some questions. Yeah.
I don't stand up, do I? Can you just clarify for me, when you were talking first about culture and you said that strategy each culture for breakfast, and then when you did the points on... I have it written down. On teams, and then you said the last one was if you had a problem, inattention to results. Mm-hmm. You said that when the results hadn't come, it was because somewhere in your team. How do you delineate between it's one of the teams or it was a culture issue?
I think I wouldn't even see them as two different pursuits or two different topics at that point. It would be my team culture is part of our, I mean, you couldn't even come into our organization and spend very much time, and then you couldn't pry apart our organizational culture and our team culture. And so, in other words, in our teams, I'll get practical real quick. Like we have cultural behaviors that we talk about all the time. We're going to act with compassion. We are going to lead with humility, and we're going to enjoy the ride. Those are our behaviors. That's part of our culture. And yet in every meeting, that's up, and we're talking about that. Sometimes I meet with an individual person, and I'm like, hey, man, I notice you're not enjoying the ride. Or in a meeting when we're doing all those layers, right? Man, you still got to enjoy trusting one another. You still got to be humble when we're in conflict. So it's just all married together, and so I guess I just wouldn't separate them because team is our culture. Yeah.
Do you have a suggestion for how to mine for conflict on a staff team where it's you as the leader and you have one staff?
Yeah. Sometimes you have to constantly communicate that you're okay with a, not, no, maybe say it this way, that you crave a different opinion. So just say it over and over again. And by the ninth time you say it in the 14th meeting in the row that you've said it, maybe that person will go, well, I was kind of thinking maybe we could do this. And you're like, yes, and just celebrate it. But yeah, it, for a lot of people, they just feel like, I can't disagree with the boss. I mean, that's the quickest way to get kicked out of here. And so you just have to keep reinforcing it. Sometimes it's a matter of in a meeting sitting in silence. And so we'll be on a topic and we just sit there. And they get the message of like, we're not moving on until some of y'all say something on this topic that we're in right here. And so those are just a couple practical things. Yeah.
All right. So early on, you said you didn't put this into practice, or at least not very well, not very complete. Since you started putting it into practice, have you seen a definitive or a very sure metric of an increase in longevity for staff?
Yeah, for sure. And I would say the most amazing outflow of this for me that I've gotten to see is that our organization is more church first, department or ministry second than anything I've ever experienced. Now, I'm sure there are churches that are way better at that than us, but we're at a level I didn't know was possible in a church. And I attribute that to just healthy teams all the way down. And people just understand, no, this is team faith. And so even when I was in youth ministry, I'm not sure. I was probably 50-50 maybe. I justified it. I'm here to build this thing. I'm here to make this youth ministry great. And if that helps the church, so be it. But my mentality wasn't, I'm here to help this church be great. And so therefore, my ministry needs to be a support to that. And so I think we kind of see that right now in our organization. I attribute that. And then, yes, longevity, team. Think about it. When people get to share their input, they're bought in at this point. Like, they're down. And so if they're in an organization where they never get to give input, well, I'm going to find somewhere where I can help lead something. So, yeah, they'll stick around for that.
Going back to the mining for conflict, you said sometimes a personal attack will come out.
Mm-hmm.
How do you mend that fence? I mean, once the personal attack is out, there's hurt feelings. There's damage done. And so how do you get that smoothed over again?
Yep. So, yeah, we definitely had that. That's why, again, if that happens, it's probably a trust issue, not a conflict issue. And so we're going to go back then with those two team members and go, hey, you guys got to get this right. And so we have had people, we've had individuals on our leadership team that a meeting has gotten into that personal area, or we just can tell that there's a lack of trust there. And we've said, hey, you guys need to meet, and I want you guys to meet, you know, every week for a couple weeks, or meet three times over the next, you know, 10 days. And just get through this and talk through this, whatever. We've had team members that knew that they just needed to do that. So they've had that moment of personal attack or broken trust. And then as we've corrected that, or maybe the next week we might ask about that. Hey, have you guys, yeah, no, we got together and we went to lunch and man, we're straight. And so again, it starts to, people start to police themselves and kind of know that that happens. And we're going to deal with it in real time. And then we might assign them, Let's get healed. Let's get whole. We can't carry this into this moving forward. So we'll just give them that assignment, and most of the time they'll do it. And honestly, if it gets to the point that they won't, then we'll have to move some teams around. I guess you won't be on this team because we believe in this trust thing that much.
So Super Johnny, there are a lot of good to great teachings and systems out there for organizational level, team level, and personal level. We recently started applying EOS, book called Traction, more built for secular world, but we've applied that within the church. Do you have a recommended book or a system that we can bring
home? Yeah, I mean, some of you probably recognized it, but a lot of Pat Lencioni's stuff is what we are really leaning heavy into as far as organizational health, and they are healthy teams first, and then everything you're trying to accomplish is going to come from that, and so the couple books are, there is a book called Five Dysfunctions of Teams, which is where some of that team stuff I was teaching. There's a book called The Advantage that he wrote that is kind of an not just teams, but an overall organizational idea of like, this is what will give your organization the advantage, is if you have some of these healthy things working. And so those were the two books. And then his system is really what we're leaning into. And then we've seen it make a really big impact for us.
Okay, one last question, Pastor okay. Johnny.
Thank you so much for your time. Just a quick question on when do you know when it's time to let a team member go?
Again, so we would go back to our behaviors. And so competency would be an area. So it's not just about, so in other words, we could have somebody that's culturally a fit, but not a competent fit. So, okay, we either need to move you. And so we have that sometimes. I mean, I got a guy that is probably a really good cultural fit, but not a great competence fit in his role. We're thinking about trying to move him around, see if he works better in a different role. Because if you're a cultural fit, I want to figure out how to get you into a competency fit. But if you're not a cultural fit, I don't care what your competency level is, you might have to go. So we have sat down with people who and said, hey, it seems like you're having a tough time dealing with people, and there's not a humility about you. It's like you won't help this, and you won't do that. Or, man, it seems like you're miserable. Like we haven't seen you smile in like 2 months. Are you happy here? Oh, not really. Oh, well, you know what our behaviors like. You know our core behaviors. Like, you got to enjoy this. Like we work hard, but we have fun doing it. So I guess, is it maybe time? So because we have those kind of things set in place, I don't even have to be the one deciding to let you go. It's like you deciding to let you go because our culture is set. And if you're not a part of that, then you're kind of making that decision.